Welcome to the Aesthetic City podcast. In this show, we aim to discover how to go forward and create a more livable, beautiful, and healthy built environment. I'm Ruben Hansen, your host and founder of the Aesthetic City.
Today, we have a special episode recorded at the Utrecht Summer School of Traditional Architecture and Urban Design. Let's build a beautiful city. Our guest is one of our most listened to guests who has returned for the second time. He's the founder of newtrad.org and has been an important figure in the international architecture uprising movement. So please welcome Michael Diamant.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah. Second time this time.
Second time, yeah. I'm really happy to have you here again. So we are recording in a hallway actually at the University of Utrecht, one of the library buildings to record this podcast. So you might hear a little bit of echo, unless I can figure out how to edit it out. So yeah, welcome back. What are your thoughts so far?
Well, it has been amazing. The last years have been really amazing, and the growth of this movement. And since your video about the Nordic uprisings, there have been so many new uprisings all over. So we are finding new uprisings all the time that we didn't even know about existed. But people listen to the aesthetic cities video, and they created something of their own. So this has really become a movement, an international movement. And now it's our job to support them and to make them self-sustaining and local. So what's happening is really amazing. And I must also comment, because I am here at the summer school now in Utrecht, it's so wonderful to see students from all so many different countries. You know, I spoke to an Indian girl, to an Albanian guy, from everywhere. And they have the same passion and the same interest. And they have seen how the built environment is really being torn down and destroyed by modernism. And they want none of it. They want none of it. They want to show that there is an option in their country, in their communities. So that's my first initial reaction, happiness. Yeah. To see the growth of it, to see the interest, to see the young minds that haven't been taught yet to hate tradition, that are open-minded and want to bring this to this century.
Yeah, and they're introduced with a lot of our teachers with drawing in studio. It's wonderful to see them kind of blossom and make friends, design and draw beautiful things, and really have to discover hand drawing as well.
Yeah.
Which is unique because, well, modern education, well, they do learn some hand drawing, but then they quit and do everything on a computer.
They grow their talents. Not everyone aspires to become an architect. We have a developer here at the summer school, and there's a PhD researcher also here at the summer school. But they are all needed, because it's a wide movement that needs not only architects, it's in all types of people interested in this. So here they learn new skills as I said, all the networks that are created.
Yeah.
Because some of these people will stay in touch after the summer school, they will visit each other, they will help out each other, and they will be able to ask questions to each other, you know, what's going on in your country? They can recommend things, literature, everything.
Yeah.
So we're building up an alternative to the school system here.
Yeah, because can you reflect on the current school system as far as you know about it and what you have seen and how this could turn into something else?
Yeah, the current school system, well, everyone knows that it's modernist and it's self-selecting now. I mentioned that before. So that gradually the professors are modernist, and now most people that apply to architecture school are people that like these strange shapes.
Yeah.
So you get a certain self-selection. Of course, there are people that are, you know, more open-minded, but either they conform during their studies or they quit. Mm-hmm. But what I see now, that I knew a little bit about before, but now with more engagement on social media, is how venomous, you know, the architecture teaching is at architecture schools, because what they do is that they make students uninterested in learning traditional. They don't forbid them from learning traditional, but they make them uninterested by labeling it. So classical architecture is, despite that it's, you know, it's just a common name, you have classical tradition from different culture. It's white supremacy, it's racism, it was built by slaves or bad working conditions. So they really make the students despise tradition. They don't forbid them to study it, but they make them uninterested in studying it because those people that made it were bad, evil, etc., 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 misogynic, everything. It's really, I have no other words to use than evil, this teaching. And I encounter it by so many young architecture students that are not the first year, but maybe they are the fourth year or fifth year. They've been really conditioned to believe that classical architecture is equal to racism.
Do you have examples of stories or?
Yeah, I have many stories. You can just follow, you know, my Twitter accounts or the different Instagram posts that I make. Just a common argument. Oh, but classical architecture was built by slaves. But no, classical architecture was not built by slaves. An overwhelming amount of classical architecture was built in the late 19th century and early 20th century, in the early 1900s. There was no slavery then. It's just a stupid argument. And also, if we should have, you know, working condition as a measurement, well, the most prominent modernism of today is built in Dubai. How are the working conditions there? Or in China, that has like 60% of all building cranes in the world. How is the working conditions there? Aren't the workers there very much exploited because they are not allowed to reside in the cities? They have the I don't know, forgot its name, but like communal system, the hoku system, I think it's called, where they are not allowed to reside in cities, so they have no rights. And then they build the Chinese city. So overwhelming majority of the built environment, modernist built environment, is built by people that have horrendous labor conditions.
There's a very selective focus, and that's used to label something they don't like as bad, even though it is.
They don't even discuss, you know, the merits or the pros and the cons with classical architecture. They wanted to kill the discussion because they know if they have the discussion, they will lose. So they have to label it and make students uninterested in engaging in it.
Yeah. And here we see also with the teacher team, which is quite diverse, and they're all, a lot of them are very moderate, actually, in their views, if you have to look at their political views. But that's the whole point. Like, it's a non-political summer school. We have also the backgrounds of the students. They're very diverse backgrounds and opinions. But most of them are quite moderate or even left-leaning, I could say. Which is absolutely normal and very welcome. And it's just absurd to think that this whole field is sort of dominated by evil right-wing conspiracy theorists. Types.
They are welcome as well to the classical tradition because
everyone
is welcome because everyone can find something because it's a tradition. Individual styles can have political leanings, and they had before, but not the whole tradition itself. The whole tradition is like a loose framework and philosophy how to create buildings, and from that everyone can, you know, pick the mindset and then create a style that reflects of their political leanings. But for all, it's a more humanistic way of building because of the scale, because of the proportions, and because of the stylistic elements that relate, that there is a history of this place, that we weren't born yesterday.
Yeah, and it's very pragmatic. It's pragmatic and it's humanist because we look at what makes people want to live somewhere, and then also what was successful in the past, and we're not afraid to take teachings from things that were successful in the past, which is very pragmatic. Like it's what worked, can we do it again?
And that is, you know, there is a play with, not a play with words, but it's semantics. And yes, in a sense, the traditional movement or classical traditional movement is conservative. But when I say conservative, in most, you know, general language, conservative and reactionary has been confused that they are the same word. They are not. Reactionary, you are someone who wants to go back in time. Conservative is just, you want change, but you want change. You don't want any change. Change should be equal or better. That's the most human of all natures. People do change, but only if the change is better or equal what they had. You don't change for change itself. So in a true sense, if you use the word correctly, conservative, then the movement is conservative. Because it's always about, you know, pragmatic best practice. you keep what is good and you change only what needs to be improved.
And then you have, of course, the false belief that there is a lot of, in architecture, that traditional architecture does not embrace any innovations, that there is, that it is completely standstill water. But there is a lot of, everything that is of use is being incorporated, of course, in traditional. But anyway, that's...
no, but it is a good topic because there is so many amazing functional details in the traditional architecture, and every city has them. So every city has had, I forgot who I'm quoting now, but tradition is a problem. How to say, tradition is the solution to a problem that everyone forgot what it was. And it really is. It's not always obvious why traditional cities look like they do, but they do it for a good reason. And when you don't stick to tradition, then you get so many problems, and they discover it more and more. I come from Sweden. Our modernist artists strangely believe that we are at the Mediterranean. So they build flat roofs. I used to work for a company that built a big new warehouse with flat roof, and it is in Sweden. So of course we had leaking roofs in the winter. And now they're rebuilding an entire mining town in north Sweden because they built flat roofs. So there is leaking. So it's like, how do you say, if you just look at tradition, you'll find so many interesting solutions, small details that really, really help. And every little town and city has these local traditional solutions because they're based on hundreds of years of experience and just wisdom.
So, and then the beautiful thing I think also about traditional architecture is that these wisdoms have accumulated in such a rich body of work, and that is all being put aside. That's just, I don't understand.
No, neither do I. But it can only come from people that have been taught to hate the past, because otherwise it's just preposterous. Can you imagine any other field where they would say, like, no, we can't learn anything before 1945 because they were this and that. It's like let's forget
penicillin, for example.
Let's forget penicillin. But every field, every research field, and architecture is also part of a research field. You build upon past knowledge, and it's a gradual accumulation. And you test things, you can react false theories, and you can embrace new theories, but you don't make like a clear field. Now we are forbidden to learn anything before 1945. So modernism is a big lie. It's really a big lie, and they can only sell it by forbidding the alternative. Make us forget the alternative, make us believe that the alternative is not possible. Or when we show that it's possible, that it shouldn't be done because if you build it, you are evil.
And what here you get as well is just very practical knowledge. In this summer school, they really see, okay, so what is a regular road width? You know, just something to start from. And then, I mean, when I was studying urbanism, well, you see some road widths and you have some books, but it's not like this is a kind of a typical standard. And then, you don't get the completely practical guidelines to design something, or to like to kind of how to design a nice street. And that, so there's nothing to build from. There's not like a basis from which you can diverse. And here I had this one student who told me, like, finally I learned some true, like, kind of practical stuff I can actually use, and I can actually make something. And that was also something I really missed during my studies. It was you just directly went into the theory and very abstract ideas.
And it should be practical, because you need to, it's always easy. I told the students that I met you, because I had a lecture about some practical things to think when doing city planning. Of course, I'm a backseat driver, but if you don't have these things in mind, and then you create a master plan that's built, it's very hard to change. And that's the problem we're seeing now all over the world, all these idiotic modernistic master plans that are implemented, and how can we change them afterwards? We need to, that's the problem. You need to really demolish the entire area, because you need to redraw the grid, you need to redraw street widths and hierarchies, you need to remove barriers that are created. So if you don't do things right from the beginning, it's very hard to change then in the future.
Yeah.
And you need these practical considerations, because otherwise, if you don't think of them, you will do wrong. Mm-hmm. It's not that you intend to do wrong. It's just that you haven't thought of what you know unintentional consequences will be of your master plan.
Yeah.
If you haven't taught, you know, learned from past experience, why cities look like they do, why are some districts working and others are not?
Yeah. Have you seen the master plan for the area the students are designing?
Oh yes, I did.
What do you think?
It's an area in Utrecht, quite a large area. It's a bit isolated. It's perfectly shaped like a big rectangular, and it's quite a large area.
Yeah.
It's surrounded by very trafficked roads.
Yeah. The Merwede canal. Yeah, the Merwede canal zone is what we're talking about. Yeah. Mm.
So it's a challenging area, and what they are planning to build there. On one side, you have wonderful central Utrecht with its five-story buildings, really amazingly wonderful built environment, and it is possible. It's not only biking or walking, cars can get through. It's mostly thin one-way streets, but cars can get through. It is a very functional city, and it's a very popular city that's so full of life. And what they want to do in this location could have been built in the 1960s. You have different blobs of very, very high, tall buildings, very tall buildings. And that's the shocking part, you know, you see the new Utrecht close to the central station. You go from scale from 4 or 5 story buildings, a lovely dense environment that's walkable, that is bicyclable, that you can take your car even. And then you go to these 15, 20, 25 story buildings that are just megalomaniac in size, that bring nothing to the city. There's no, you know, nice area to walk around. It's just dead space, and it's storage for humans, and it's storage for office workers.
Yeah.
And so these preposterous things, they're going to replicate. On one side, they see a city that everyone loves. Instead of, okay, this is what works, let's continue with this, they build this, the suggestion is to build this preposterous 1960s area. So what the students do here is lovely, because all the plans that I've seen now from where they're working is a million times better suggestion. So I really hope that in the final end product should be precedent for the municipality. There is an option. Build upon what people like with Utrecht.
Yeah.
Not just stack more people.
And then to think of what would happen if these plans would be presented to the public, and if they could have a vote on which one they would prefer. That would be very interesting to see.
Yes, and that's why it won't happen, because modernists don't want an option. If you present people with an option, they will always choose wrong. That's what they hate. That's why. Consider this: we in Twitter and on Facebook, we present a lot of polls that show what people prefer.
Yeah.
And it's always the wrong answer according to the modernists. You know, majority will always prefer traditional. So they question the polls, but then the question is, why have they never asked the question? Why do they never ever? Why is there no modernist? Why is there no public hearing? What environments do people like? Why don't they dare to tell this question?
Because they don't hold polls.
No, they don't hold polls because they know that they will get the wrong answer. So better never ask the question, so you can always claim that, no, you're wrong. People do like modernism. Well, why don't we find out? Mm-hmm. They're not interested in finding out because the truth will be wrong according to them. People will give the wrong answer.
Yeah, and that's I wonder. I think it's important to present this plan in some way, perhaps do a press release, just to show it, because there needs to be a way to show this to the public. I think there might be interest from newspapers.
Yes,
but there will be pushback.
Oh, there will be pushback, but the newspapers will love it because it will be a story that, if we should talk media logic, it will be a story that will be very clickable and that will be very engaging. So I definitely think that you can talk to newspapers.
Yeah.
And you can also spin it in a way. If we talk media logic, how they are funded, you can say this is the young minds that will live with the consequences, that want this classical against these old white men that want to build this 1960s modernist environment.
Yeah.
You can spin it in many ways, and also add to it that, and this is true, so nothing that we say is a lie, classical architecture and classical urbanism is more environmental friendly than modernism. 10 times more, 100 times more, a million times more. You get longer lifespan, you get better urbanity, you got less traveling. There is no metric where traditional urbanism and architecture is worse than modernism.
Yeah. Make sure that people have a reason to love their, to keep their environment by making it making them love it.
So this is also part of identity, you know, because Netherlands, like many countries, there's been a lot of recent migration during the last 40, 50 years. And this is not something new. France, if you take Europe, France, Austria, Hungary, the US, all had very large external and internal migration to the cities. So they had very diverse populations in their cities. So they used, in the US, what's called City Beautiful Movement, they had idea to create, you know, a common civic, you know, a more sort of raffinated civic of all these diverse populations that came.
Yeah.
And since it always seems to be that immigrants, you know, okay, immigrants, I'm half immigrant, you know, so it's not all immigrants, of course, but a large segment of the poor population in most Western European countries are of immigrant background. So why don't give them an environment, you know, that lifts the spirits rather than suppress it?
Yeah.
That make them also proud where they live.
Yeah.
And know where they live.
Yeah.
You know, it's not anywhere. I live in the Netherlands. I like my area. It's beautiful. I associate with it. I associate with Netherlands, you know, part of the integration and assimilation process. Not just that you are thrown in some extremely horrible, ugly, modernistic environment and you feel, by many reasons, of course, not only by architecture, distant from the society that you live in.
And then they wonder why there's crime and they decide to put a brightly colored community center in the place too.
Yeah, and some tech, the word, one of the new buzzwords that I hate the most, and I must really emphasize, tactical urbanism is just big BS. So now I did my Leon Krieger here and said something controversial, but tactical urbanism is the biggest nonsense. It's just a big scam to make municipalities pay for projects that has no direct results, that don't engage the communities that they are in. It's just I saw tactical urbanism in Malmö, southern Sweden. They put a piano in the central square of a modernistic square and wrote an essay how engaging it was for the locals.
I mean, it's kind of a low budget means to fix modernist problems. Or problems that have been created by modernist town planning and architecture. But it's a it's kind of a fixer. It's kind of a fix, a cheap fix, a quick fix.
Plaster on, how do you say, lipstick on the pig?
Put some colored chairs and some chess pieces and paint some of the floor in a special, so people can play games and then nobody used plays the games because they have been enforced on those people.
So it's a big scam. So everyone doing it, stop doing it and do some real stuff. So what is real stuff? Well, go to Paris area. The communes around central Paris are doing wonderful work. Yeah, you have made a video about Le Plessis Robinson, but there are more. There are Clamart, there are Puteau, La Garenne Colombe, I butcher all French name, Leblanc, Mesnils. There are so many communes that have big programs transforming like dystopian modernist high-rises to walkable and wonderful urbanism. And the idea is you keep the original residents, but so you mix, you attract, at the same time, you attract people from central Paris that want, you know, a bit more greenery, but still want the traditional urbanism.
Yeah, more affordable homes.
Yeah, more affordable homes. So you also raise the socio-economic level of this, and you can have like a positive effect, you know, by bringing a lot of middle class. How to say, you can assimilate people that are, how to say, on the margins of society into more.
Yeah, and then gentrification is of course directly shouted because you're gentrifying those areas. But gentrification is just a signal that the place is
becoming attractive.
Yeah, attractive to be, and so it should not be about preventing places from becoming attractive.
No, if you just combine all the new build with apartments, so you move the original happiness to still new rental apartments with the same rent, or you have programs in the communes. I'm very impressed with the French, how they do it. you help people to buy their own apartment. And this is important because there's nothing more, you know, maturing for people. I say this now, controversial thing as well. We used to be renters, like a majority of Swedish people rented their homes, their apartments, like 70%. Then in the 1990s, we started a privatization way. Not all privatization were good. It was very bad to privatize our energy system. But when it comes to housing, it was so good because it made the general public and people like me mature. We owned our own apartments. We were, you know, we had agenda over our own lives. We didn't just go to the state and state should solve our problems. We are matured. We solve our own problems.
Yeah.
And this is a mindset that's really, really good for people to have. So in general, I support, you know, helping people, as many as possible at least, that are, you know, mature enough to own their own apartments. And in that sense, it becomes even better. If there is gentrification of an area, then they can sell for a large profit.
Yeah. And still, of course, you need some social housing. And that is perhaps harder in the United States. One of our teachers, Lou Oliver, thought all about it. That it's just, well, if there's no incentives in place, it is very hard to get that in the United States. But in Europe, it does happen. We have traditional, beautiful social housing because we have just it in place.
Yeah, United States, they have political problems why they don't want to mix and don't want social housing. And I will be clear about that as well. It's because of the problem with policing. Because of the amnesty that has been created by this woke and this identity politics, what you end up with is complete segregation. Because everything is viewed through a lens of race. So why would you want integrated communities? Why do you want mixed communities? Why do you want poor people in an area when there is a chance that the poor people will be persons of color? Because then you can't police them, because then there will be accusations of racism. So you get like a complete segregation of class, you get a complete segregation by race, everything gets completely segregation.
But that was also designed for segregation. You have this wonderful Instagram account which shows how United States urban planners basically designed for segregation. They would put rich, every income class had its own suburbs and they were divided, so you could not drive from the one suburb with for high incomes to the lower incomes. There was just no connecting road. You would have to go all the way to the big feeder road and then go into this other enclave.
I believe that is true, but that doesn't mean that it's true today. Today there is, you know, how do I know that racism on the decline? Well, just look at the figures for interracial marriage in the United States. You know, it's astronomic growth of interracial marriage. And if you are able to marry people, I don't think you hate them that much. So there is so much better. There could be integration, but there cannot be integration. You know, if there is crime in an area and you can't address it, then people will just stick to their own.
So maybe another question, because maybe a bit more about social media, because we have seen well, a number of breakthroughs and rise in reach for your appearance in the Cave of Apelles podcast. It has gone super viral in reels and in shorts and TikToks, and also some of my reels with starring you have been very successful, and my Instagram channel has grown a lot since I have posted those reels. So could you reflect a bit on that, and why do you think this has really struck such a chord with the audience?
I think for once I believe in what I say. I am passionate about what I say. I'm not relativistic. I don't back down, and I cannot be shut down. You know, they use in this age, in this very interesting age, it's you don't win by having virtues. You need, and I mentioned it many times, you need victim points. So the first thing they will do is they will try to label a Nazi, far right, proponent of slavery, blah, 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 blah. But they can't do it with me. Every time they do, I remind them, yes, my mother is Jewish. Her parents fled to the Soviet Union during the war. She was born in a refugee camp in Soviet Uzbekistan. They returned back to Poland. My grandfather was almost hanged. You know, Yeah. It's very hard to label me a Nazi after hearing my family, my personal family story.
Yeah.
So then they have no other arguments. Then they have to make, you know, factual arguments, and then they have none. What is the factual argument for we should build dystopia? There is none. There can only be the only argument they have is that they try to shut down everything. So passion, reasoning, and not being, how do you say, I don't want to say that I'm smarter. I'm not smarter, but just reasoning, being open-minded in reasoning what works and what doesn't work. You know, of course I'm like ideological, but at the same time, reasoning what works and why not.
Yeah,
yeah, and I want a green city, but maybe cars is not a bad idea after all. How to say, how to see things from many perspectives. How to make this, why or what are the interests of different groups? How can you bring these all these groups together?
Calling out that the emperor doesn't have clothes on.
So just being, pushing this aggressively. Why should we be nice to people that on purpose? Because this is important to say. I've said it many times and I still say it. 99% of people still believe that there's a practical reason for the ugliness of the modern world. No, there is no practical reason. It's an ideological reason by modernist architects. They introduced relativism. They don't care about beauty. Their only agenda now is narcissistic. They want to create something that is new. They don't care if it's good. The most important thing is that this has never been done before. So they push this ugliness on the entire world.
Yeah.
For no other reason than their own narcissism.
Yeah.
So that's the reason. And
the audience, what has changed in the audience, you think? Or has the audience always been kind of ready for this message and it hasn't reached them yet? Like what?
Oh, the audience has always been ready for this message. They have just not been told. They have been told that maybe they like classical buildings individually, but it's just their individual taste. And they've been told that it's just a matter, that there is a million tastes. But if you look at all the surveys, strangely, it's like individual taste of millions. It's everyone has the same individual taste. So it's not individual taste because it's not individual. It's inherent in our biology to love classical architecture. It's not that you are taught to like Roman columns, but the more and more they do neuroscience research about it, you know, it's fractal patterns, it's certain scales, it's readability. The more you do it, you understand why we like classical architecture. And it doesn't mean if it's Greek or Roman, Western, or if it's Japanese, or if it's Islamic or Hindu.
Yeah.
The reasoning and the philosophy behind these are fairly similar, and they result in a sort. Of course, they are varied; they don't look the same, but the principles are the same. You know, are one of harmony.
Yeah,
and it resonates with everyone, no matter where they come from.
Yeah, and even because the Cave of Palace, which is, by the way, something our audience should definitely look up. Mm. They're wonderful people, and they have very interesting talks about philosophy, art, and it was a bit more. It was less well known. I mean, still, if I talk to people, not a lot of people know the podcast directly, but I'm maybe not in the in the artist and philosopher sphere. Like there, it's probably well known. Mm. But your reels and also those of Eric Noreen, by the way, really blew up and has helped them gain a lot of, and have held other really interesting interviews. I think some interesting ones are coming up.
Yeah.
We had a dual interview, but I think it is telling that this podcast had immediate and grand success with this story about architecture. And I think it's because
it's an easier sell. It's an easier sell.
Because everybody is in touch with architecture every day.
I don't want to say that art or philosophy is niche, but they are in everyday life for
us today.
It should
not be niche.
No, it shouldn't be niche, but for everyday life, a person, it is a smaller subject.
Yeah.
While architecture is, you go out and you are exposed by architecture. But the thing is that architecture, the architecture uprisings, and you know the change in architecture, which changed these fields as well, because they suffer from equally much modernism than architecture.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, modern art is just a big catastrophe. There's no talent needed. There's no nothing. It's just snake oil salesmen, all of them. You know, putting a banana on a wall and taping it, selling invisible art. It's BS everything. But the public, as with architecture, the public has been told to shut up and just pay for it.
Yeah.
And since they accept it because they are not exposed to it directly. But let's say that we now, when we're changing architecture, you teach people that they have a voice, they have a right to say, and that they shouldn't accept bullshit. And this will, of course, mediate.
Yeah,
it will spread to music, it will spread to poetry, it will spread to art. But architecture is the perfect battering ram to open up this modernism that has perverted everything in society. Yeah.
Because I think it's the same for music and art. A lot of people who want to study it are discouraged because it's taken over by kind of a type of content or aesthetic they don't like. They don't, which is not pleasing. For me, I didn't like to design the things in urbanism, the things we were supposed to design. Mm. I was my passion really was, came back once I discovered that there was another way. And I always loved drawing classical buildings and traditional buildings, but I thought if this is design, if this is how it goes in university, I don't want a part of it.
Yeah.
But if that would have been different, I might have been an architect now and not recording this podcast.
Well, I can say in terms of classical music.
Yeah, exactly. That's the same.
Can anyone?
Or art school.
Yeah. How the lack for classical music is Hollywood. Because all the real new classical music the past 70 years is Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Star Wars.
Hans Zimmer,
Scarface. Indiana Jones, all the lead motifs of all big movies, it's classical music.
Yep.
And there is real classical music. It's not the one that you will go to listen at an orchestra, because contemporary classical music, yes, they are experimental and it will be just unbearable. And they will see ladies with big thick glasses and say that this is amazing, and they will praise it in the news, in the newspaper. But the real classical music is in the movie industry. So they had Quinlan Terry had, private clients that ordered, country houses in the UK.
Yeah.
For the classical, real classical composers, their escape was film music.
Yeah, and kind of the soundtrack is kind of the modern suite. It's kind of the modern symphony, kind of. Mm. Yeah.
So, but does anyone think that contemporary classical music matters? No. Does anyone think that contemporary poetry matters? No. Does anyone care about contemporary art? No, not a single person. Because it's not for them. They have been told, shut up, pay for it, because this is the thing with Europe. We pay for it by state. So the state pays for something that no one cares about, no one is interested about, doesn't relate to anyone. But if you're told that maybe they shouldn't get stipends to do something that no one cares about, just waste of money, then you're a Nazi. It sounds so strange for many people to hear this, but this is the initial response you will get by this community. And this also, by the way, has led to my more passion, because I get so provocated by it. I get so angry about it that so many good people are silenced because they haven't got victim cards that I do.
Yeah. Are you hopeful? What signs, what are your biggest signs of hope, and what are your biggest points of despair?
The biggest signs of hope is the networking, that people are connected. So people are connected and new young minds come along all the time. That gives me hope, that people that didn't know about this movement existed 1 month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, 1 year ago, they know about it now. And they connect to a lot of people like-minded in their own country and in other countries. So it's like a net now all over the planet gradually. And there's more and more interest, and there's young people studying it. That's the positive thing. And there's the demand for it as well. They're big. It's not like someone building a country house. It's big construction companies that realize they make more money, so they build a lot of large-scale projects.
Yeah.
Then there can also be a discussion about quality, etc., etc. But it is a big thing. Especially, I'm especially impressed by Berlin and the communes around Paris. I don't say that the quality of the new classical architecture in the communes around Paris is the greatest, but the building companies understood that This is what people want. This is what sells.
It sells, and it leads to relatively attractive places to be.
Yeah.
I mean, in Le Plaisir.
The scale is wonderful.
So. Yeah, there was a bakery where I was sitting in front, and it's a new bakery. It's a new building. Mm. It looks a bit French. It feels French. Mm. I had my lunch there several times, and it was like I was sitting in a regular French town. Town. Yeah. Maybe not like the most beautiful of, but it was pleasant.
Yeah, exactly. It's pleasant, and that's good enough at the moment. That's really good enough at the moment. And it's not one or two buildings. Hundreds of buildings, thousands of buildings in the Paris communes. So all the communes surrounding Paris want to create Paris because they understood that this is what people want. So that gives me a lot of hope, just market forces.
Yeah.
And we had a speech now by an American architect, Lou Oliver, and he really emphasized this.
Yeah.
You know, we stress for developers that this is profit maximizing, because it is.
Yeah.
And then you get scale. It doesn't get, you know, one nice neighborhood. Then you can really pump it up to 100 new nice neighborhoods or 1,000 new nice neighborhoods if you just emphasize the profitability. And every developer that tried this new traditional architecture, they discovered that it's profitable, and then they do it.
And that's also one of our first lectures was about Jaap Evert Abrahams. It was about the planning of the 17th century canal ring in Amsterdam, the Grachtengordel. The city council was developing this, and it had three main ideas or three main points to develop this. One was use, of course. One was beauty, and one was profit, and they were all connected because it needed to function, of course, but it also needed to sell, and in order to sell, you need beauty, and they understood it from the get-go, and we still have it. It's now UNESCO World Heritage, but it was a very commercial, because it was for them the way to pay for the new fortifications around the city. So it was a project for which they needed a project for which they needed profit, and beauty was a way to get that profit. But nowadays there's such a huge lack of housing that, well, we are in this clinch. We need to build a lot, but the point is, people don't want all these towers around them. Why not? Because they're ugly.
They don't. There's no need for towers for density or good urbanism. It's just it's very practical for construction companies to build towers. That's why it's sold. So it's like everyone is duped by this idiocracy. And I really want to continue what you said there, you know, housing shortages. Read history. What was the housing shortage in 1900? It was 10 times more extreme than it is today. 10 people living in a one-room apartment.
Yeah.
So it was much more extreme. And the cities built that we love, any 19th century city, Barcelona, Prague, Budapest, Paris, speculation by greedy capitalists. And why do I need to stress this and emphasize this? Because also now in a lot of online discussion, people believe that it's because of capitalism that we don't build beautiful cities. No, capitalism has been around for 150 years. If you want to study exploitative capitalism, then go back in time 100 years, you know, with no labor regulations or anything. Then you had exploitative capitalism. What changed was not capitalism. What changed was the architecture profession and the relativism and the modernism that they introduced in the discourse about architecture and planning. So capitalism the same. It's a force that has no more. It's a force. It's not an ideology. It has no morals. It doesn't care if that does good or it does bad. It's only there for profit maximizing, and it's not bad because it's a very good. It's a powerful force.
Yeah.
So what was the difference between before is that all this power force was led into something good, creating the cities that we love. Now with the modernism, capitalism becomes an ugly force. Because partly, you know, because of their relativism. If you ask a modern architect, he cannot tell, you know, what is beautiful and what's ugly. And this is true. Everyone tries it. Put a beautiful building in front of a modernist architect and an ugly building. Ask him which of these is two more beautiful. He will not be able to answer. So they introduce relativism. And if you're a developer and you hear that there is no beauty, you laugh all the way to the bank and you build a concrete box. And if someone says, but this is ugly. No, it's just a matter of taste. It's the eye of the beholder, you know, beauty. And then you have this also conditioning that if you criticize something, then you're a Nazi. If you have an opinion about the texture, then you're a Nazi. So they silenced critique, they introduced relativism and they silenced critique. And that's the reason why the modern world is ugly. Not capitalism, not greed. everything has been around since the beginning of humanity.
Yeah. Then maybe continuing a little bit on the point we were making about Paris, because they're building a lot of new neighborhoods around Paris, and they're all kind of in the style of Paris. But then you might get this criticism, yeah, you just only want to copy the past and copy what is already there. But is that really the case, or is there a way we can also innovate, but still within the traditional design language? And how could you see that take shape?
Of course, there is innovative. As I told, the classical movement is not a reactionary one; it's a conservative one, one of continuation, not political conservative. Conservative in the meaning what the word really means. So we want a continuation. So you take one step back, return to the framework, and then you have continuation. But at the moment, because let's say in Paris, it's the developers that run it. They have no ideology. They don't care to push classical tradition forward.
Yeah.
They see what works. So they make pastis classical, and it sells. Do you want, you know, a change, a further development of the classical tradition? Then you need that critical mass of classical architects.
Yeah.
And someone is talented, will break the rules of traditional architect in a good way, manner, as has always been the case. Take the last beautiful classical style.
Yeah.
And when I say classical style, it's not classicism, it's classical tradition.
Yeah.
Jugend or Art Nouveau, as it's known in many countries, they broke the rules here and there, and the result was amazing.
Yeah.
But it's still the overall framework is there, but
exactly.
They broke the rules a little bit here and there. And that's what you will see emerge when there is a critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it's not like in modernism. It's not that every architect is a masterful artist, a genius that will change. Most architects would do work with established styles. Then you have very few that is very, very talented, and they will push forward. They are the ones that will help to create a new style, and then the rest will use their already beneficial styles. Because creating something completely new is very, very hard.
Yeah.
And it should be good. It's not you don't change for change itself. You change, it's equally good.
And how about the perception of the future and what is futuristic? How can we make a traditional futuristic style?
A traditional futuristic, there are so many options. I talked a lot about synchronism, because there was a lot of cultural meetings in the past. If you read history, and this is something that's probably not taught in architecture schools or in many places, there was a fascination with Japan. So you had Japanese, you know, they were inspired by Japan. Earlier than that, there was a fascination with China. So we built Chinese palaces in Europe, inspired by. We even made fake Chinese porcelain we made here in Europe. That was the fascination. It was clearly European, but it was to imitate. So there can be like, we continue this road of both creating new but also synchronism of the different cultures that meet, that take root in different places.
We need more courage as well. I feel like there's this place in the Netherlands, Veldhoven, for example. They're gonna renovate their city center, and it's right now absolutely horrendous 80s city center with some 90s buildings which are gonna be torn down and replaced. And I'm thinking, so, well, you can, of course, return to 19th century or 17th, 18th century construction or styles, local vernacular, or you could, if you really want to be innovative in a way, but still build something beautiful and not just glass boxes, you could take Art Deco and maybe a bit more industrial heritage and relate to ASML, the big chip machine factory, which is settled there and actually attracting a lot of workers. So they need to attract talent. They need to grow. They need to innovate. They need to improve their city center, because it's a place where no one wants to be. So build something of beauty, but then have architects design something that is actually
relatable to the place. So you both relate to three things to relate to: Dutch culture, antiquity, yes, Greek or Roman, because we are in Europe and in the Netherlands, but also to future, to locals.
Or local industry, maybe.
I don't know the demographics, but maybe there's a big community from Suriname or from Morocco. Sprinkle the Art Deco with motifs from there to show the, you know, the local population. So invite everyone that this is their local style.
But also in Art Deco, you see trains, you see automobiles, you see all these new inventions being introduced in ornament. And I think that's a wonderful thing you can still do.
Yes, definitely. You can definitely do that because those were the things that they were, you know, not there. There was so much great hope that the combustion engine would revolutionize, and it really did. That it will solve poverty, that it will solve so many problems. So it was they put in the ornamentics things that were hopeful for their time. What is hopeful for our time? And then the nihilistic march, and then there is no hope, there's only climate doom, blah, 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 blah. Every time had their problems. If you lived in the 30s, what was your belief in the future, you know, with fascist, Nazis, communists, you know, you name it, you know, and every democracy dying. And still they had hope. And at the same time, after the First World War, people always had hope. There has always been difficulty in human history, but they still had hope. We have hope and aspirations for our future.
Yeah.
I sound almost like Hans Rosling now, but statistically, the world has never been a better place to be born. Statistically, a majority of people have possibilities now that only a fraction had 100 years ago or 200 years ago.
Yeah.
How many people are able today on the globe to pursue an academic career?
Yeah.
How many Chinese rice farmers, the talent pool there, are able now to study and become part of...
To become modernist architects.
A side note, they are really ruining China with consequences because they destroyed their traditional urban fabric. It needed a modernization because it was too low rise, but it wasn't working urban fabric. And they replaced it with these horrendous tower environments where everyone gets lonely and no kids are born.
Yeah,
and China is really all of these states are really suffering from this.
Yeah, population will implode. I mean, people are still in this mindset that they still need a one-child policy, while their whole population is about to collapse.
Yeah, it's collapsing. It's not like a slow shrinkage or something. It's really, if you look at the population pyramid of South Korea and now even China, it's scary. It's scary because there is simply 10 years. There's no young people left. Mm-hmm. There will be a geriatric societies. And then there will be no housing shortage then, because every year a million apartments will be free. But it's not the solution.
No.
You need stability. It's not that a population should grow forever. No population can grow forever, and no population can shrink forever. It's the speed that matters. A slow decline is welcome, but not a collapse. That's not a future that anyone wants.
Yeah.
It will be such a troublesome future, and that will be a dystopian future with no hope.
Yeah. If you were like a student in a modernist architecture school and you were hearing this and and you would have advice for this person, like what would you do if you were such a student and to learn traditional architecture if you still have this kind of wish to be innovative in a way, or how could you bridge that? How could you solve that dilemma for such a student?
First of all, he needs to find a new community, because there is a risk that he will be alone, that he will be a clear minority among his peers. So go online and find a community of like-minded, a support group. And when I say support group, this will be of course by among other architect students or other architects, but know for sure that the general public will love you for building a beautiful and traditional. So they are the people that should matter for you. Secondly, this notion of being innovative and an artist, just please stop. When I say this, there is so much to innovate in a classical facade. You can use so much inspiration, but your focus is mainly not to be this avant-garde, creating something new for the sake of being new.
Yep.
You will create beauty, and that's hard enough. To compose a beautiful facade is hard enough.
Yeah.
And the traditional gives you so many more options and tools. Instead of a blank facade where you put the windows randomly, you can express so many things with ornament, with lines, with beauty, with stylistic elements. So you get a much richer palette to actually create something original, if that's your main purpose. But I think it's a mind virus. leave creating the most innovative thing to those that are really talent. Focus on creating, every building that you do will be a new building. So it's new in that sense. But focus on making it good, beautiful, harmonic, and beloved by the community.
Yeah.
Does every car maker strive to be, I should create the most original design that no one has ever seen before? Yeah. No, most cars and telephones, they look pretty much the same, I would say.
And if you want fame, if that's what you're looking for, then becoming an architect in the architectural, in the traditional scene you will be part of the avant-garde nonetheless, because it is kind of an avant-garde. There is a groundswell which is happening. You are one of the few, so you're already one of the more special ones by doing so.
Oh, you get love from the public.
Yeah.
You will not get love from your colleagues, but they are a minority. We see it in the Swedish uprising. When we post things suggested by the few Swedish classical architects, it explodes. They got so much love, so much support. Everyone really loves what they do.
Yeah.
Even if we had a 14-year-old, very talented kid, and we published his drawings. And people are, please grow up and reshape my tower. Yeah. So you get so much love and positive feedback. But no, you won't get it by your architect colleagues.
No.
But don't care. They are not the ones you are designing for. You are not designing for coffee table books. You are designing for the public.
Yeah.
And the public is not stupid. The publics are people that are professionals in other fields. But they know what they like. They know what they love.
Mm-hmm.
And you, as an architect, it's not that you are forbidden to create something, but it should resonate with them. In the end, they are your clients.
And those coffee table books, those will come at some point. They will come, and they will not be filled with modernism anymore.
No. I know for sure that Adam Architecture and this developer in Germany, Ralf Schmitz, he makes coffee table books that you can buy of his new projects. So you can end up in coffee table books, and there are even black and white photographies in these coffee table books. So you can be very sophisticated and have a polo on you and glasses. But they search for fame and recognition in the wrong places. And you can get real genuine love. People that will love you for what you do and what you bring to them. And that is what is worth something, that you are loved by your local community.
Yeah, because it is not about, it is mostly about fixing people's places where they live, where they interact with their with their peers, with where they work out, where they walk their dog, and you kind of create a place where they like to be for them. So you're giving them the biggest present, a present they can enjoy every day.
And that affects them emotionally. They get happy when they see. They get happy to see what you do.
Yeah.
So I can't promise love letters, but you will get very, very, very positive feedback. From what I've seen from the comments, very, very, very. It's like hundreds of comments of just cheering these architects.
Yeah. What opportunities do you see for online teaching in this field?
Well, for some, it may be the only option, unfortunately. As the situation is, but online teaching is just networking mostly. I believe that you have to be in a school like this, because it's like online work. It works in some ways it works, but in other ways you miss all the small talk of an office, where you exchange ideas and get critique and you get honest, in a Zoom meeting. You don't necessarily get honest answers, but in the kitchen at the coffee machine, you may get more true comments.
Yeah, and you get a chance that people can actually kind of bow over your drawing and look at it, and actually, and that's really hard. Showing a PDF file will never be the same as just being able to point at things in your design, and just that whole human touch misses.
I can be way, if I just stray here, I'm very much in favor of online work, because it can really solve the life puzzle for so many people. I saw it with my own siblings and such. If one person is able to work from home every day, so you can split it, I work home 2 days, you work home 3 days, and you switch every week.
Yeah,
so all the daily choirs are done.
Yeah.
And you can, when you finished work at 5 o'clock, you can immediately start making dinner or get the kids. It makes life workable for the modern family, where it's not that some women may want to stay home,
yeah,
but now no one can. No one can afford in Western Europe to have a stay-home wife or husband. You have to have two incomes.
Yeah.
And for the things to work then, really work then, and not people being stressed to death, it's very, very good if one person can work from home, partly. So 2-3 days at the office, 2-3 days at home.
Yeah, yeah. That's I think that's also that's wonderful for parenting, for watching.
I think
it's
very good for local communities, because then more people, you know, it will not be that everyone has traveled to work. Someone will be at home, maybe walk the dog or something, you know, in the lunch break. So
yeah, and maybe a final question about what has happened since our last interview, and then also what you hope will continue happening after this interview. So what have you seen happening since we last spoke, which was, I think, one of our first conversations almost a couple of 2 years ago, perhaps.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
And what hope do you hope that will happen after this interview?
Explosion of interest by general media, by different kinds of media. Also, that more has discovered. You know, like we spoke about, the developers noticed that this is a subject that creates a lot of. It's worth for them to build, because they can sell for a larger profit. It's profit maximizing for them. Also, a lot of media channels discover that this is a topic that really people want to listen to and engage in. So it also, like of media logic, many more got interested. So I made interview in public radio, a recent one. There will be an article now, can't tell, but it's a big American newspaper that will come.
Wow. Yeah.
And this is because they're also operating in a world of economy. So they notice that this is something that public is passionate about and that generate interests. So this is also a positive. This is the positive thing. By this interview, it really started, you know, like a snowball effect that is growing, 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 growing. And the media jumped on the train now, because they understood that this is a topic that engaged the public, and then it generates clicks, and then it generates revenue for them. So just by market logic, now there is an interest for it. So that's the breakthrough. It's just some angry podcasters that sit here and why not more of this. It's like it's becoming mainstream now. So that has changed. And it will only continue growing, because it has spread now, thanks to the aesthetic, very much thanks to the aesthetic city, you know, that video. It has spread now to many countries. So the exact same discussion that we had in English will be in a multitude of different languages. You have an uprising now in India. So in a few years, we'll hear the discussion in Hindi on the radio, where they bash, you know, modernism. Lovely. You'll have it in Chinese, you will have it in Arabic, okay, the dialects are very different, but you will have it in Arabic, in certain dialects, you'll have it in Spanish, you'll have it in all the world languages. The discussion will be exactly the same, but it will spread, you know, the ideas have spread, and then it will be a gradual growth.
And then more people, hopefully, I just hope more people will be able to follow architecture as their passion, but that the passion they were not able to
reach
in the current system.
And they will be trained in a different mindset, that you can learn from the past, you can learn that you can respect people that lived before, because modernism is so preposterous. It's like it equals man's technical progress with man's spiritual progress. So somehow we are superior that people that lived 100 years ago. And nothing could be more false, because people that lived 100 years ago, 200 years ago, they created things we still cannot recreate, despite that we have 10 million times more technology than that they had. So in that sense, they are superior. I wouldn't say that they are superiors. I think that they are the same people as we are today, and we will be the same people 100 years from now. When we are dead, they will be the same people. So man's technical progress and man's spiritual progress are two different things. They should be separated. We are the same people, and this mindset they will be taught now. And that will lead to wonder, because then they will open books, and then they will learn and discover, they will rediscover a lot of things.
Yeah,
and it will lead to more pragmatic, more humanistic environments, yes, that are actually designed for humans, emotional well-being, their physical well-being, instead of now for architectural fame or being in a coffee table book or doing something new for newness sake.
Yeah,
which is
something we see everywhere, not least in Utrecht. Yesterday we walked in the new station here in Utrecht, and you see on this ugly high rises, they are really fixated with creating new. So how do they create this new? They put the windows randomly. They make random, I don't know, inroads into the building, just random, because it has never been done before. Is it good? Is it beautiful? Yeah. Is it practical? Neither.
Has it never been done before?
Oh yes, of course, because no one has been that stupid at the moment. But they did it because their most important attribute of a building is new for new its sake, not that it's good. So that was a long answer.
Yeah.
I can add a worry. AI is a worry for me, because it's makes the mind lazy. It's an amazing tool. It's an amazing tool. I mentioned at a dinner, you know, that I worked at a food delivery company.
Yeah.
And we asked ChatGPT to write, you know, a haiku, a Japanese poem about delivering foods from like the cranes, where the trucks drive away from. And it did it, and it was amazingly beautiful and good. So that's the danger with ChatGPT, that it will make the mind lazy. Because as much as our muscles need training, our minds need training. So that's a worry, but ChatGPT or AI can create beautiful architecture for us. No, we must be involved. We must be involved. I'm 100% for that. And it's the same with ornaments and crafts. I am afraid for pushing everything for manufactured ornaments. Yes, it has been done partly in the 19th century, but it's again, we're making ourselves lazy, and we're not putting transcendent spirit in what we do. It's just a machine that makes it perfect and makes it sterile without any meaning. It will be beauty. The beauty we create will just be like a fashion fad. It will not have any genuine meaning. So AI is a danger. And of course, the second danger is the lack of formal education still. This is the big failure of us in the whole trad movement. Yes, you can study in the US, you can study to be a classical architect. But in all of Europe, there is still no formal education. And as long as we have no formal education to have a classical architect program, we will always be like a tiny minority.
Yeah. Happily, we have a summer school. There's one in Bruges. Mm. There's one in Cambridge. There's one in Spain.
And they do excellent work. They really do excellent work.
Yeah.
It's just that I want them year-round, 5 years in
Spain. Exactly. Yeah. Because if you see what our students do in 3 weeks, just imagine what they could achieve in a year or in 4 years.
Mm.
5 years.
Yeah. They could completely transform the whole built environment.
Yeah, it's incredible the kind of drawings they are able to finish in like a couple of days. And then you just
the
extrapolate
that.
The
insights that they get from here, from these 3 weeks, the insight that they didn't, you know, all the years at the university, they didn't get any. And here suddenly they get practical insights why some things are good in urban planning and why some things are bad. And what are, you know, the alternative costs of making things.
Yeah, and just by example, not just random, this is my opinion, it's bad, but just showing with true real-world examples what works, what doesn't work, and that it's so clear. I mean, Jane Jacobs already showed it.
Mm.
What is it? How many years was that ago? I mean, in the 60s.
Yeah, 60s.
Yeah, so that's 40, that's 80, that's 60 years ago, something like that, which is more than half a century.
Mm.
And it is, and that book is on everybody's reading list.
Mm.
All the urban planners have one copy of Jane Jacobs.
And that's the strange thing.
Yeah,
they read Jane Jacobs, and then they still do modernism. so it doesn't really need to help. It's like you should, because the whole modernist mindset is, I must express it is so perverted. What is the 15-minute city that they try to push now? It's the traditional city, a 50-minute city that existed since the time dawn of cities. Oh, but we invented this new concept. No, you didn't, you idiots. It was, you know, the city before modernism, all cities were 15-minute cities.
Yeah.
So it's all the time this mindset that we had to create something new. It's so mentally forbidden to look back and learn from experience. That generally works because people love Central Utrecht. You just feed the love of, you know, when people sitting at the canal and eating at restaurants, it's like genuinely love and life.
Yeah.
And they love Central Stockholm as well. And no one loves the modernistic areas next to both cities.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a wonderful place to finish this interview. Thank you so much for being here again. And I hope everybody enjoyed this interview.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to be given, you know, a platform to express this at this. I don't say that I'm all-knowing, but I do say I'm so open-minded that I can learn from the past. Try to be that yourself. Look at what they did and resonate. If they made such good things, then maybe you can learn from them.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you so much, everyone, and see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode. You can find the link to newthread.org in the description. If you like our content and want to support what we do, you can support us in various ways. The easiest way is to give this podcast a favorable review. Another way to support this podcast is to share it with colleagues and friends. You can also follow us on X, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or our Substack newsletter. And finally, the ultimate way to support The Aesthetic City is to become a patron. Find the Patreon link in the description. For more information about this platform, visit theaestheticcity.com. Thank you, until next time.